Radio Prague News.
The flow of illegal migrants to Germany through the Czech Republic has dropped since March. The number of dollar millionaires in the Czech Republic has increased to 28,140, and a Czech hiker reported missing in Austria has been found dead. The flow of illegal migrants to Germany through the Czech Republic has dropped since March, Interior Minister Jan Hamáček told the Czech news agency following a weekend meeting between German and Czech police officials. Hamáček, who is currently also acting as the Czech foreign minister, credited increased cooperation between the country's police forces for stemming the tide. He did not provide specific figures, but his overall assessment contradicted that of Bavarian Interior Minister Joachim Herrmann, who said the traffic was on the rise and has called for the Schengen border between Slovenia and Croatia to be protected by its own Frontex mission. The Czech external trade balance in goods ended in a surplus of 6.9 billion crowns in May, down 8.2 billion crowns in annual terms, according to preliminary data published by the Czech Statistics Office on Monday. Year on year, the total balance was unfavorably influenced mainly by a decrease of surplus in motor vehicles and a larger deficit in coke and refined petroleum products, other transport equipment and chemicals and chemical products. A lower deficit in computer, electronic and optical products had the main positive effect on the total trade balance. Trade union leaders have failed to reach agreement with government representatives on wage increases in the public sector. A deal concerning a pay rise of public sector employees should be reached by mid-August, the head of the Congress of Trade Unions, Josef Středula, said after the meeting on Monday. Unions are demanding a 15% rise for teachers and a 10% salary hike for other public sector staff, including firefighters and policemen, starting this October. The number of dollar millionaires in the Czech Republic has increased to 28,140, which is an increase of nearly 11% on the previous year, according to figures released by the consultancy Capgemini on Monday. The combined wealth of Czech dollar millionaires increased by 13% over the past year to $68.5 billion. Among the main factors behind the growing number of wealthy Czechs is the country's increasing GDP and growing real estate prices, as well as the strengthening of local investment markets. A Czech hiker reported missing in Austria has been found dead, local police wrote on their Twitter account on Monday. The 62-year-old tourist got lost in the Dachstein Mountains in the Austrian Alps due to heavy fog. His body was discovered by rescuers on Monday. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Tuesday is expected to be overcast with scattered showers and daytime highs ranging between 19 and 23 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková and you can find more news at radio.cz. You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franková. Coming up in today's program, the Romanian film I Do Not Care If We Go Down in History as Barbarians took the top prize at this year's Karlovy Vary Film Festival. Drought and pesticides have caused an outbreak of aphid infestation in the Czech Republic. We have the summary of the latest Czech sports news, and later we meet Hanna Maritz, whose family escaped from Czechoslovakia into Germany when she was just three. All that coming up, so please stay with us. The Romanian film I Do Not Care If We Go Down in History as Barbarians took the top prize at this year's Karlovy Vary Film Festival. Hollywood star Robert Pattinson brought lots of glamour to Saturday's closing ceremony, while Oscar-winning director Barry Levinson was also among those honoured. Ian Willoughby has more.
The Crystal Globe for Best Film at the 53rd Karlovy Vary International Film Festival went to I Do Not Care If We Go Down in History as Barbarians. The Romanian film explores a World War II atrocity committed by Romanian soldiers through a staged reenactment of those events. Its director, Radu Iude, explained the relevance of the subject matter today in an interview for Festival TV.
This film deals with the memory or lack of memory of, or the possibilities of representation of the ethnical cleansing done by Romanian army and administration in 1941. Of course, you look at the today's world or today's Europe and you see not the same things, because I don't believe that history is repeating itself, but you see racism and anti-Semitism and negationism and a lot of these things. So a story from that time is relevant, and this is why I put together these two moments, the present and the past.
The Best Director Gong at Karlovy Vary 2018 went to Olmo Omerzu for the Czech film Winter Flies. It centres on a road trip involving a couple of teenage tearaways. Omerzu credited the film's success to the screenplay by Petr Picha.
Usually when we are watching coming-of-age films, we can find a big presence of adults, how he's remembering the childhood or how he's watching about this topic. And I had feeling with this script that he's really not using that, that he's totally like in a documentary way watching a topic of youth.
The Oscar-winning director Barry Levinson received Karlovy Vary's Crystal Globe for outstanding artistic contribution to world cinema. The Rain Man maker had this to say on stage at the Grand Hall of Hotel Termal.
This is really a special honor, you know, for a kid growing up in Baltimore, Maryland, to be here in the Czech Republic, to be accepting an award for contribution to world cinema is absolutely thrilling to me. It's not even something I would have ever imagined in my lifetime. And for that, I am very, very grateful. Thank you very much.
The most glamorous guest on Saturday was without doubt the UK actor Robert Pattinson. Speaking to Festival TV, the one-time Twilight star explained why these days he mainly does relatively low-budget movies.
I just think there's just a little bit more freedom. The lower the budget is, there's not so many investors who panic when you do something crazy on set. So I think as long as you keep... And also, I can't really tell the difference with having a really massive budget. I've never done something which is like huge, like one of the Marvel movies or something, so I don't really know the feel of it.
UK actor Robert Pattinson ending that report by Ian Willoughby. This summer, aphids, those small sap-sucking insects which infest potatoes and other key agricultural crops, have appeared on Czech farms in alarming numbers. While drought is a factor, efforts to save the honeybee are also behind the infestations. Brian Kennedy has the details.
Due in large part to the mild, dry weather this May and June, which followed upon a wet winter, the tiny but ravenous aphids have been breeding earlier than usual. As such, they have been dining on crops still in the seedling stage, and so less able than mature plants to survive an onslaught. Especially invasive have been the peach potato species of aphid, which, despite the name, attacks most varieties of fruits and vegetables. Under the right conditions, up to 30 generations of aphids can spawn in a single year. This according to Jan Sitek of the Central Institute for Supervising and Testing in Agriculture. He advises farmers to prepare for the worst.
With aphids, everything happens quickly. They multiply quite rapidly. A week of good weather is enough to see an infestation. Aphids definitely thrive in dry weather, so the number of outbreaks increases with the lack of rain. These insects eat leaves, of course, and also damage plants' ability to take in water. But apart from that, aphids are quite harmful in that they transmit viral diseases, which is particularly bad for potato seedlings.
Climate specialists say the Czech Republic is drier than it has been in at least 80 years, with droughts ever more frequent. In April, the government approved 2 billion crowns worth of compensation to farmers who suffered losses due to particularly long droughts in 2017. The Ministry of Agriculture has also earmarked over 140 million crowns for building new irrigation systems to try to maximize the use of what rainwater there is. In the Czech Republic, where this summer the potato aphid is proving just as ubiquitous as the staple tuber itself at traditional meals, many farmers are no doubt praying for rain, But the weather aside, the growing number of aphids also may stem from recent measures introduced across Europe to protect the health of honeybees and other vital pollinators. A 2-year EU-wide ban on certain pesticides on flowering crops, such as oilseed rape, was introduced in December 2013 to that end. But while good for the honeybee, that ban on neonicotinoids, extended this year to cover all outdoor crops, has made it easier for agricultural pests to breed. Compounding the problem here, the Czech Republic is a major producer of both oilseed rape and sunflowers, both ideal breeding grounds for aphids.
Brian Kennedy with that report. And now I'm joined in the studio by Ian Willoughby, who's got the summary of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin with tennis and the news that the Czech women's number one, Karolina Plíšková, was knocked out in the fourth round at Wimbledon on Monday afternoon. It was the first time Plíšková had made it into the week two at the Grand Slam tournament. But in the end, the 26-year-old was unable to get past Kiki Bertens of the Netherlands, who won 6-3, 7-6. Jiří Veselý is into the fourth round at the Old England Club after beating Italy's Fabio Fognini in four sets on Saturday. That result set Veselý up for a clash with world number one Rafa Nadal, which takes place on centre court on Monday evening. That's after the recording of our programme. Petra Kvitová has been named Women's Player of the Month for June after successfully defending her title in Birmingham. The 28-year-old also achieved that accolade in February. The two-time Wimbledon winner exited in the first round this time out. Football goalkeeper Tomáš Vaclík has fulfilled his dream of joining an elite European club after signing with Sevilla on a 3-year contract. The 29-year-old had spent 4 years at the Swiss side Basel and becomes only the 10th Czech to play in Spain's La Liga. Vaclík previously played for Sparta Prague and has 20 international caps to his name. Another noteworthy recent transfer is Jakub Jankto's move from Udinese to Sampdoria. The midfielder, who's 22, has joined Sampdoria on an initial loan deal that will later become a permanent move. Media speculation suggests the fee for the one-time Slavia Prague player stands at €15 million. That would make him the 6th most expensive Czech player of all time. And finally, veteran goalie Jaroslav Drobný is staying at Werder Bremen. The 38-year-old has inked a new 1-year deal with the Bundesliga side. That's all the sports news for today.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Many people escaped from Czechoslovakia, often in fear of their lives following the communist takeover of 1948. Among them was Hanna Maric, who was just 3 years old at the time. She is Ian Willoughby's guest in this edition of One on One.
Sociologist Otakar Machatka was decorated as one of the leaders of the Prague uprising. However, as a senior member of Edvard Beneš's post-war government, he became a marked man soon after the Communist Party took power in 1948, and he and his family were forced to make a terrifying escape from Czechoslovakia. Last week, I heard all about that hazardous journey from Otakar Machatka's daughter, Hanna Maric, who was just 3 years old in April 1948. She and her family were on a visit from the US when we spoke in Prague. Given that Hannah's parents were born around the turn of the 20th century, I was first curious to learn what they told her about some of the fascinating history they'd lived through, including the First World War.
You know, they didn't really talk about it very much. It was just part of the background. But, you know, the whole thing with Austro-Hungary and the changes and, you know, the different democratic periods, and all of that was very, very hard for them. I admire that they went through all this, and I wonder how it was possible for them to go through it all. So much suffering for one lifetime.
Many people speak about the First Republic when the Czechoslovak state was founded in 1918, in that 20-year period after that, as a particularly successful period for Czechoslovakia, at least for some section of society. How did your parents speak about that period?
Well, it was a long time ago, but You know, when I came here in 80, I expected to find some remnant of that world, and I didn't. There was nothing left. It was a time of grace, where people spoke kindly to one another. I mean, I remember he said that he had worked in the statistics office, and a man would come every week with cash to pay people their salaries, and there was never any problem about walking around with cash to pay people. So it was a very gentle time where people were felt that life was going to be very good, that they had actually reached a pinnacle of some sort of social contract, shall we say. So they spoke about it in terms of a very golden kind of a period.
Your father was a sociologist. Did he have any specialization? I understand he founded the first marriage counseling service in Czechoslovakia.
Well, I don't know about that, but I know that he did marriage counseling in America. Yes, family was his specialty, yes.
Tell me about your father, Otakar Makotka, and World War II. How was his war?
He was a freedom fighter, so he resisted the Nazis, and he writes about it in his memoirs. There was an uprising, and they did fight against the Nazis. And I heard stories, but, you know, they didn't really talk about it all that much.
And when did your father become involved in politics?
As far as I know, it was after the war, but I don't really know. He didn't talk to me about that. He became part of the transitional government. He became the vice president of whatever that was called, the transitional government.
That was under Beneš?
Yes.
When the communists came to power, your father was one of those people who, or your family were among those people who immediately found themselves in danger. Could you tell us, please, about your family's escape from Czechoslovakia?
Well, a student came to my father and told him that he was on a list of people to be arrested and executed, and my father left immediately. We don't quite know how he got out, because he never talked about it. My mother thought he took a plane, but I don't think they ever spoke about it, which is pretty amazing. And he left my mother with three children, and she died our clothing black that day, and we set out for a so-called hike in the country. So we packed rucksacks and left. I don't know, it might have been the same day, I don't know. And we traveled around for 2 weeks by train, slept in hotel lobbies, and all the while she was in contact with the party. They were trying to find her a way out. She made three attempts. The first two failed. One was because it snowed and we couldn't leave tracks. The second had to do with the person who would have been taking us across. She got a warning that this person turned people in. And then on the third try, it worked. All the borders had been closed except this one mountain in Šumava, which is called Ostri. It's the highest mountain there. And no one would take her with three children, so she found another group that would take my brother, and my brother was 11. So he went with total strangers. He must have been terrified to do that, but he did it.
And how old were you and your other sibling?
I was 3 and a half, and my sister was, she must have been eight or nine.
Do you have memories of that?
No, zero. I knew nothing about it until I heard about it. Like, I was 10 or 11 myself, I heard about it. But I have no memory at all. But it obviously had a very profound effect on me. But let me tell you about that escape. So it was a group of people and a man who knew the countryside very well. They were smugglers' paths. And there was quite a few of them, so this person knew the paths very well. And it was at night, and my mother couldn't carry me, so a student. It was a group of people, less than 12, I would say, but so this student carried me. And I met him years later. So it was cold, it was April, there was still some snow on the ground, and I know that one time when they sat down, it was so dark, she sat in a stream. Dogs were barking. There were guards, but they were able to make it up the mountain. It took most of the night. And then when they got up to the top, they didn't know where the border was. There were no markings. So that was a little bit hairy. And finally, a farmer saw them and waved them on to the German side. And then when we got to the German side, it took several days to find my father. He was already in a political person's refuge. And my brother had found him already. His people connected them. And so both of them were at this place. It was called Alaska House. It was a mansion, an old mansion. And my mother... So we hadn't eaten anything for those 3 days. And she slept in churches or I don't know what. And a student then told her where my father was. And it was a weekend, and there was a fence around the place, and she couldn't get in because the guard had orders not to let anyone in until they were, you know, they had to be screened. But he saw that we were a family, you know, through the fence. They passed us chocolates and stuff like that, and the guard let us in.
You say that this escape greatly affected you. How did it impact you?
What happens in childhood is very the foundation of how we are in the world. I would say one of the profound effects that I feel all the time is that I forget everything. You know, this sense of forgetting constantly.
Is it the case also that years later you retraced that journey through Šumava to Germany?
We did, yes. My son and my cousin's daughter and myself, we came back about 5 years ago, and we retraced that journey. It was really wonderful to do it, to see how difficult it was, and just to be there and to complete the circle. And it was quite amazing because, well, it was very beautiful. It was summertime and there were flowers everywhere. So, but there were, you know, now it's a recreation center and people are riding their bikes and skateboards and everybody's having a good time. And so the feeling for me is we don't know what's gone on anywhere. And the whole world is full of places where dramas have played out for people. It's profound, this feeling of, well, this is such a beautiful, calm, lively place, and yet people can turn from being human beings to being something other so easily.
Tell us about your family's move to the States. I understand your dad had already been there, maybe your mom too, yes, in the 30s. Yes. But still, it must have been a big adjustment. They were, I guess, in their late 40s?
Yes, they were late 40s, yeah. I think it was a terrible adjustment. They had been here, yes, it was in the early 30s, yes, before the war. And my father had a lot of connections in sociology. He met with Margaret Mead and some other big sociologists. So he had connections already. They traveled all around. They saw the West, which was for them a big deal. The West is much admired here. And so my father had a job almost immediately. We only spent a few months in France and then came here. He worked at the University of Chicago first and then at Cornell and then, finally this new university of the state of New York opened up in Binghamton. And he took that job. It was a good job at the time. $5,000. It was a big deal. But yes, their adjustment was very difficult. One thing was that there's a lot of suspicion post-war, and people didn't want to rent us a house. And my father finally said, what am I to do? I have children. And so finally we were able to rent, but it was difficult. And they never really adjusted them. I mean, they had excellent English skills. But it was a huge culture shock for them.
Did people suspect that they were communists or something coming from Eastern Europe?
Who knows? Probably, yeah. Well, there's a lot of post-war hysteria, you know.
Growing up in the States, how alive to you was your Czechoslovak background?
It was very alive. At that time, there were still groups of Czechs and Slovaks who got together. There used to be... You know, there was this thing called a slet, which is where they get together and do gymnastics and stuff like that. And then there's a big cookout and with their wonderful sausages and cabbage and stuff. And so we would do that every year, that we would go to those. And my father would often speak. And little by little, those things just went away. You know, people moved on and those groups disbanded, unfortunately. I had a very close sense of culture because my parents kept it up. They spoke Czech at home, and they were obviously very attached and close to it. You know, they couldn't communicate with their families, so for them it was a way of keeping it all alive. Now I speak Czech because we spoke Czech at home, and it's very advantageous. Language is so important for keeping culture going.
Jumping forward many, many years from your childhood and youth, I understand your father's ashes were interred at the Vyšehrad Cemetery here in Prague.
Right, yes. My brother arranged that. He lives in Italy, but he comes here frequently and has many, many connections. And he arranged for my father's ashes to be brought back and for my mother's. And we just visited, you know, the gravesite. And it's a great honor to have them here, you know. They never returned. And my mother could have, but she was not real well at the time. And I think emotionally she would not have been able to handle it.
And how do you feel being here today?
I feel it's home to me and to my family. They all feel very much at home here. I feel like I've completed the circle, and we just love it here.
Hannah Maritz was Ian Willoughby's guest on that edition of One on One, which was first broadcast in September 2017. And that brings us to the end of our program here on Radio Prague. If you have any comments, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.